You're listening to Grassroots, www.innovationstudios.com. I'm Marcus. I'm back for another week. Week 47 of your Q&As. And I'm working through. I've had a good week this week. Been up to a few things. Playing my shows, covering a few bits here and there. And enjoying the sunshine here and there when I've had time. Anyway, look, your questions have been coming in. And you know what? You're getting a message. I've had a few coming in on Twitter, which I actually said was at Innovation Studios, but I think it's at Marky Guru. So I might have messed up a bit there. But anyway, I've had a few via that. I've had a few via email. I've had one or two direct messages on Facebook. And I'm looking forward to a longer, hot summer holiday. The kids are starting to break up. Jennifer finished her exams a few weeks ago. And they are enjoying the sunshine. Matty's year finish in a couple of weeks, I think. So we're looking forward to a long, hot summer with days in the garden. But for some of you, it's going to be travelling off to your venues, setting up all your stuff and doing your gigs on Saturday night, sweltering in the heat in these places that have a terrible habit of saying, sorry, the air conditioning is broken, because they want to turn it off so people drink more. That's the truth of it, right? And it, all the landlords out there, you turn the heating off, you turn the heating up a little bit during the summer and you say the air conditioning is not working. You don't have to pay to have the air conditioning on, saves you a bit of money, and people get sweltering hot and drink more. Oh yeah, oldest trick in a book, isn't it? Anyway, look, I've been taking your questions. I'm not accusing anybody of anything there, by the way. I'm just saying if I ran a pub, yeah, it'd be the hottest pub in the area. So let's get to your questions then. Let's have a little look. Let's have a look here. Here we go. Mike says, what is the most common mistake you make when mixing? Right, Mike, where have you been? There's been 46 of these. Or 45, I don't know. The most common mistake that people make when they mix, Mike, on a serious note, and if you're listening for the first time, is that they always feel that they put all of the sounds in the middle of the picture, so to speak, so they don't pan anything. Panning is left and right. So it's basically your left and right speakers. Sometimes you pan something over to the left or the right. If you listen to AC/DC, you'll find one guitar's in one speaker and one's in the other. Bass is in both and drums are in both, or some of the drums are in both. But the most common mistake people make is to just turn the volume up and keep turning the volume up on the instruments until everything is there. Sometimes it's a case of, I'm trying to think, there's a game called Kaplunk. And what you do is you kind of move stuff out, you pull stuff out, and you've got like the middle thing at the top. And that as things are moved left or right or moved out, the thing at the top drops down. And what happens, that music is a bit like that. If you've got everything there, and then you're trying to get the vocal loud enough, sometimes it's nice to just move a guitar into one speaker, another guitar into another speaker, panning left or right. Move the bass ever so slightly or leave it in the middle, but because it's a different sound. Keyboard, just keep that sort of, you know, there. And make space for the vocal to drop in rather than sit on top. What you're looking to do is to get the vocal to drop into a space. And the most common mistake that people make, and it depends on how many instruments you've got. If you've only got an acoustic and a vocal or maybe a bass guitar, then pretty much everything's in the middle. But if it's a full band, you need to make space for instruments to breathe on their own, to have that space to be heard. And also you'll find if you have a guitar coming out of both speakers, you can only have it to a certain level. As soon as you move it right over to one side, you can crank that right up. If you listen to AC/DC and how loud the guitars are, the reasons that the guitars are so loud and drive the music in the way that they do is purely and simply because they have their own speaker to breathe in. They have their own space to breathe in, and they have their own volume almost to play about with. And you can really crank those guitars up when they've got this big space around them. So that's the most common mistake. And also, you know, pretty much adding reverb to everything and then putting reverb on afterwards. Also, people sometimes, I reverb the bass. I don't always think that the bass guitar needs reverb. I think sometimes it just, you know, needs to drive. And then what people do, or what I tend to do, is add individual reverb to everything. So the guitars, the acoustic, the snare, the vocals, different reverbs. A little bit on the snare, yeah, on the drums maybe. Not a lot on the kick drum. And then I put the whole track through a blanket reverb. So I've taken that band with their individual reverbs, if you like, and put them in a hall, which is going to pick up a natural kind of ambience that picks up a little bit of blanket reverb over the top. Not much, but that will then just add a tiny bit to the bass as if it's being played in a hall somewhere and it's just reverberating around the walls. Most common mistake is always, though, that it's a levels thing. Make space for the instruments. Allow instruments to fall back into the space rather than sit on top. That would be my advice. Need help setting up your own home studio? Why not book a consultation online? Here at Innovation Studios, we can help and advise on the best equipment for you, your ideas, your budget, and your space. Maybe even book a home visit. We can help you set up, install, and use your software, offering a recording workshop in your very own studio in your very own home, going through techniques and offering advice and guidance to get you up and running. Go to www.innovationstudios.com for further information. Maxine from Rayleigh Weir. Oh, you only round the corner, Maxine, how are you? Marcus, do you have any unusual superstitions, or have you heard of anybody having unusual superstitions before going on stage or during being on stage? Do you know, funnily enough, I was thinking the other day that I was watching, of all sports, darts. And also it reminded me of a story years ago that I read that in football, Kevin Keegan had a superstition that he liked to be the last player on the pitch carrying a football. So it didn't mean he was the last player to come out on the pitch, but he was the last player to come out on the pitch carrying a football. And it was just something that I remember reading. And I was watching the darts and I thought, wouldn't it be really strange if both players had the same superstition? And that is, they believed that they needed to be on the stage first, or they needed to be on the stage last. So you'd have this thing where both be fighting over who was introduced, or they'd be introduced together and run towards the stage because the first one to get up there, or this thing where they wanted to be the last one on stage, where they get introduced and they hang around at the bottom of the staircase of the stage and wait for the other player to go up, but the other player won't go up because he's waiting for them. And then it's like, come on, lad, someone's got to get up there. No, I've got superstition. So I don't have many superstitions that I can think of. I've not heard of many superstitions other than, you know, sometimes somebody might prefer to be on one particular side of the stage. But I think music is not really a place for superstitions, because you might have this thing where you always have your amplifier at a certain level, but in some venues you can't do that. So, you know, that can't work. And you might have a superstition that you always carry a tambourine. You know, and you know, that could kind of work, but in some venues, when the music's nice and quiet, you don't need to be banging a tambourine. So I don't know that I can think of any off the top of my head where people have said to me, I've got this superstition when it comes to music. But feel free to email me on that or message me on that. Email innovationstudiosuk@gmail.com. Or Twitter, which is at Marky Guru. I think there is an at Innovation Studios, actually, but at Marky Guru, MarcyGuru. That's my private account, but you can email me on that. That's on Twitter. Message me on Facebook, either through the Innovation Studios page, the Grassroots page, or directly. And let me know if there's any superstitions that you have. I off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody that's got anything where they wear a particular shirt or they wear a particular... Oh, there is one. I tell you what, there is one, but it's at international level. You may notice, I don't know whether he does now, but Ronan from Boyzone always used to sing with a plaster on his index finger. I think it was a right hand. Because he'd cut his finger before his first ever audition with Boyzone and he got the job. So he used to perform with a sticking plaster on his finger. Now, I've said that. Hopefully, you'll go onto YouTube and try and find footage of him doing it. But I'm pretty sure that if you do, you will find out that he does have a sticking plaster on his hand. I don't know if he does it now, but for a lot of years, certainly when he was in Boyzone, he used to do that. So that's one where I think it's a superstition. There's probably hundreds, but I can't, off the top of my head, think of any. And I don't really have any myself. I mean, you know, my daughter, as I said the other week, has music on, or the telly on even numbers rather than odd. And I'm trying to think now. I think some musicians have, you know, the same hotel or stop at the same services. But I don't think that's superstition. I think that's really just, you know, what you're going to get. There was a thing I read about the Beatles who one of them, they walked over a cellar and one of them trod on the door and then they went and wrote a really great song. So they decided that every time they walked, they would tread on that. And I'm not one of these people who walks and tries to avoid the cracks in the pavement or anything like that anyway. So I don't know. I don't have any superstitions, but interact with me. If you hear of any or if you know of any, then definitely let me know because I'd be curious. Innovation Studios hoodies. Many colours and sizes available. Our logo proudly emblazoned on the front. The back can be personalised with your name or your nickname or anything you want as long as it isn't too shocking. Click to order online, www.innovationstudios.com. Jimmy says, hi Marcus, in the days of the Beatles and the Bee Gees, but more recently in the days of COVID, should you share a microphone? I don't like to share a microphone. I'm assuming you mean two people singing into one microphone at the same time. If you do mean that, then people do that, it can't be helped. But if you've got people who might want to use your microphone or call the bingo and stuff like that, I've got to be honest, I hate people using my microphone. I hate it. And I do everything to avoid it. I have a spare, I mic, and I wire that in and say, there you go, use that. I cannot stand it when people want to use your microphones. I don't know, it's you know, it's like someone came round to cut your carpet. You wouldn't go through their toolbox and say, can I borrow your knife for 20 minutes? I've just got a bit of work to do. I mean, they might sort of go, yeah, that's all right. But they might think, cheeky sod, you know. So I don't know. I mean, sharing a mic in that. But when if you're both singing together at the same time, COVID and all of that pandemic stuff put the fear of God into everybody, didn't it? You know, and it was, that's my door. It all happens here. The doorbell's rung. But the pandemic put a lot of the fear of God into people. And all of a sudden, you know, kind of people were like, oh, I've got to have my own microphone. I've got to have my own personal space. I've got to have this. I've got to have that. Some of us had to sing in a mask. Oh, my God. I didn't go for that, by the way. I bought myself a visor and I said, in the end, if I can't sing in this, I'm going to pass out if I sing in a mask. Sorry. I think there was one occasion where I did it and I just said, I can't do this. And so ended up just singing without it or singing with a visor. I just said, I'll keep a safe distance. And there were a couple of places where they put me behind Perspex. But yeah, should you share a mic? Well, there's nothing more impressive than when the Bee Gees sing on one microphone because you can't overdub that. That's one sound, you know. If you don't have to, sometimes people prefer it on stage. And, you know, I used to be the front man. And when Nick used to sing a song, He used to come to the front and use my microphone. I never had a problem with that, but that's 20 years ago, you know. It's personal preference, but you've got to be comfortable with somebody doing it. I don't like to give my microphone to strangers and let them call a bingo. I don't mind them using my PA, but I sort of put another microphone on. I have a spare mic in the kit bag, if you like, or the spares bag that I'll plug in. And then, you know, before I use it, it's good to have a bag of wipes in the car, you know, or in the bag as well. But yeah, I mean, it was good enough for the Beatles, right? It was good enough for the Bee Gees. So yeah, I mean, if it works, I think it always looks good on stage as well. If two people are singing on one microphone, I think the Beatles and stuff like that, but I think it looks good. But I think things have changed. So personal preference, but from a mixing point of view, if you're, just to get technical, if you're recording and you've got two or three people singing on the microphone, you don't really want that to happen. You want to individually mic all the vocals so that if there's any problems or if somebody's singing a bit flat, and it happens, it does happen, people. If somebody's not singing properly or messes a word up, you can't just redo that one vocal. You've got to do, you know, you've got to do the three people again. And if you've got two people trying to sing the same thing at the same time, it isn't always easy. So on a technical level, if you're doing different backing vocals, sometimes you want individual mics. But if it works for you, you know, then it works. There's no definite answer to something like that other than just to say, if it works for you, it works. God, what a cop-out. Irene says, have you ever had a roadie? Yeah, I have, but it was really just somebody who was a friend of the band and knew how to change strings on guitars and would help us unload the gear in. We didn't have roadies in as much as we just walked out and played the show. Would have been nice, but unfortunately at our level, that doesn't always happen, Irene. But sometimes it's nice if you've got someone that just helps out, or someone who drives the band, or one of the parents or something. It's handy if they know how to change a string on a guitar or something like that, or how to tune a guitar, because sometimes if you break a string or your guitar goes out of tune, you don't want to stand on stage like a Wally. There's an old-fashioned word. Checking your tune in and tuning back in. Sometimes it's unavoidable, but you certainly don't want to stand up there putting a string on. You want to pick up your spare and then hand your guitar to somebody who can put a string on it. So roadies are good, and I use the word roadie very loosely, normally a parent or a brother or a family member or friend that will just know how to put a string on. Or you teach them how to put a string on. You say, this is how it's done in case I ever bust a string. And you get them a beer, just, you know, just I'll get you a few beers, just make sure you're there in case I need you to change my strings or anything like that. But I was never one for giving it the big one, you know, for having a roadie run on, hand me a guitar and kind of put it over my shoulder and plug it in like some of these people do, you know, with international level. You do that at the Dog and Duck. Now, if somebody brings on a guitar for Danny from McFly, he holds it up for Danny to sort of put his arm through and then wraps the lead through and plugs it in and then takes the other guitar and gives Danny a pat on the back. Danny looks really cool. If I do it in the Dog and Duck, people just think, what a twat, right? What a twat, seriously. What's he need all that for? So, you know, not everyone thinks that. Some people, but I would think that if I was in the Flying Pig or the Flying Goose or whatever, or the King's Head, and the guitar player like had someone running on with a guitar and doing it all properly and plugging him in, or we had two or three roadies chesting the mic before I went on, I'd be like, where's he think he is? Wembley? You know, what's his Ali Pally, is it, mate? Or is it the Flying Bottle in Chiswick? You know, so I think people would be a bit like, come on, you know, but it's handy to have someone who can change a string or can assist you with a few little bits here and there. If they know where the gig bag is and if your microphone starts packing up, you can say, can you just grab us another lead, or I ain't got my capo. They know what the musical stuff is. But no, you don't need a roadie. Not at our level. Music tuition online. Have your guitar, bass, mandolin, vocal tuition, even production live online.
One-to-one tuition via Skype or alternative streaming media. Learn from the safety of your own home. For further information, please contact us at Innovation Studios at www.innovationstudios.com.
Danielle says, should a band play at a funeral? I don't see why not, Danielle. I've played a couple. Because if that person was loved music or loved live music or celebrated at a particular venue, they might want to celebrate with, you know, might want people to celebrate live music at the actual funeral. Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually sung at one, but Cheryl has, and sometimes they might have somebody sing a particular song so it's live, or if they're a family member. So yeah, but should a band play at a funeral? Yeah, I don't see why not. Funerals can be anything you want them to be, can't they? I mean, you know, I think, to be fair, if you've got another, if you're in the Basildon and Bowers or crematorium, and you know, the next lot are arriving for their to say goodbye to their auntie Doreen, and you're still loading the van, having just done 20 minutes of pure rock and roll, you know, with a live band in there, you know, using the keyboard as, like, you know, to do all the songs. I don't know, you know, it's just, I think it's there's a strange scenario, loading a, you know, so let the boys sing, keep them back, you know, loads of barriers and stuff at the front. But yeah, I mean, should a band play at a funeral? I don't see why not. If that band's important, and I feel like there's probably been legendary bands over the years that have, if they've lost a member, they might have sung something. I believe Boyzone did it at Stephen's funeral. They sung something. And if it's something that's personal to them, why not? You know, why would you not do it? But yeah, I don't see why it's unacceptable. It doesn't really matter what I think, does it really? I mean, if it's something you want and it's your last wish, have it, you know, why not? I've always said that for my funeral, people have got to applaud as I go through the curtain and then call for more. And then the curtain's going to open, I'm going to come back out again as an encore and then go back through. So that's what I've made everybody promise me that I'm going to have. But who knows? James says, hi, Marcus, I can't get my solos to cut through. Can you advise? Okay, so if you're on a clean channel, James, then sometimes I used to use a volume pedal that used to sort of take a signal of a clean signal through to the PA, and I could just swell it in. I used to take it from the line out on the head of the amp, and that used to be quite nice. When you start using overdrive, that isn't always possible. But the most traditional way of doing it is these days of volume controls and stuff like that, you're able to just put your foot on the volume control and swell it in. Or you might use the tone control on your guitar, or turn your guitar down a bit and bring it up for a solo. So it's at a nice level, sort of halfway, and then kick it up to 10 when you've got a solo, leave it on about 5 or 6. But the most traditional way is that clean channel, you might just turn down your guitar a little bit and turn it up for the solo. And then you would have an overdrive channel, an overdrive pedal that was linked to your clean channel that would then drive your guitar and have that big fuzzy sound. And then you switch to channel 2 on the amp that would then boost the signal. But there probably are different ways of doing it. But years ago in Wall to Wall, when I used to swell my solos in, I used to just use a volume pedal, take a line from the amp into that, into the PA, and when I kicked that in, it would then just drive my solos through the front speakers as well as my amp. But that probably, people might frown upon that and say, well, what the hell were you doing that for? You can't get it right every time. But that was just my way of doing it. I always felt that was a good way for me to do it. But you've got to find different ways. If anybody's got some, I mean, some amps have 3 channels. So some of the Marshalls, I think, have 3 channels. They have a clean, you know, and then you can have like a clean, just boost it up a little bit, and then an overdrive channel, and then you can kind of mix around with those. But in these days of effects and different things, And if you're using foot pedals, or some people use a foot pedal and turn all the overdrive off, and then they kick that in but turn the volume up, and that just drives their signal through their amp as a clean way. There's so many different ways of doing it. But if you want the same, pretty much the same sound as you've got, then just find a way of taking a line out and boosting it through another speaker, or just turning it up on the guitar. But I can't give you a definite answer, and I don't know what your setup is, but if you want to send me a picture of your setup, you can email me innovationstudiosuk@gmail.com, or send it on Twitter or whatever, and I'll have a look and see what I would do. But again, as I said, it's only my opinion, and I couldn't tell you for definite, but I hope that you do get it sorted, and that it works for you, James. Laurie says, "Hi, Marcus. Is it safe to leave your gear in the van through winter?" Okay, Laurie. Well, I hope you don't mean all the way through winter. I'm assuming you mean after gigs and you're leaving it overnight and stuff like that. No, in a word. Sometimes it's unavoidable. If you're staying away and there's no parking, you can't park anywhere, and you've got to try and find somewhere to park the van, it's unavoidable. But if you're getting home, you need to bring that stuff in, because acoustic guitars, in particular, can fall apart and go, because the glue goes all brittle, and they can fall apart. I know it sounds like a horror story, but it's absolutely true that they can fall apart. And first of all, you don't want that happening. But also, many times over the years, a couple of times, I've opened the guitar case for my electric guitars, you know, and they've had so much condensation on them. And there's another word, condensation. You don't want your amps and everything electrical getting freezing cold, because when it thaws out, you've got dampness in there, which can then blow them. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to leave your stuff in the van. If you're leaving it all the way through winter, then that would be a crazy thing to do. You know, if you're putting any of your music stuff into storage, then you need to make sure that you've got it stored in a place where it's, you know, warm enough and safe enough, and it's not going to, you know, come to any harm. But I mean, to leave it overnight through winter is risky anyway, if it's really, really cold. Even in the summer, you don't want to be leaving your gear overnight because of the dew in the air, and that's D-E-W, dew in the air. And, you know, the change in the weather sometimes, you don't really want to be leaving it on a van at all. And also, of course, you can have it nicked. Keep your gear safe. But, yeah, leaving it through the winter or leaving it in the van overnight, I have done it. I've come unstuck a couple of times where one of my PA mixers or my PA power amplifiers has blown just where it's got condensation in it, and then I've switched it on and it's, you know, I think, okay, and you can smell like that plasticky burning sort of smell, and you go, I'm in trouble here, this has gone a bit wrong. So it's never ideal, but Laurie, I wouldn't leave your stuff in overnight in winter if you can avoid it. If you're staying at services and you've got enough hands, try and take your stuff into the room where it's going to be warm, but that's not always easy. But get some blankets, or at least quilts. Bring a couple of quilts from home, so at least you can lay that over the gear and it just takes the edge off. But, you know, to be absolutely honest, no, you don't want to be leaving your stuff there. The doorbell's going loopy today. Absolutely loopy. It's twice I've had to stop this recording so I could go and answer the door, honestly. Anyway, great on with it. Greg, what's the best way to tape cables down and to wrap them up? Long ways, Greg. A lot of people, when they're taping cables down, tape across the cable and then grab hold of the end and pull it and kind of try and ping it out of the thing. And what that does is stretches the cable inside and ruins it. So if you're taping cables down, run them long ways. Run the tape long ways across it, I think. People always say as well, when you're wrapping them up, because people used to do that thing with the arm where they hold the end of the lead and then wrap it around their arm. I've always kind of got both ends of the lead, halved it, then halved it again, If necessary, halve it, again so it's loose, an entire very, very loose knot in it. So it's held together, and I haven't broken many leads over the years. But you can buy these little things that with a sort of leads. They're like a big H, and you wrap the lead around it and then put the plug on it and keep it safe. So there are so many different ways of doing it. But you always want to be taping lead, because what happens is you then you grab the end of the tape, you strip it up, and then the lead kind of is free and you can pick it up. When you've got the lead taped across ways, first of all, you can still trip over it if you've got a bit of long, you know, a bit of tape across it every 6 foot. Well, that's no good. You might as well have it laying on the floor. Normal, you know. So tape it down along the cable. It's a much tidier, a much safer, and a much more foolproof way as well of making sure that you're not just yanking the lead at the end of the night, trying to, you know, get rid of it and trying to put it away quickly. So that's the best way with regards to wrapping up. That's pretty much all I've got on that. Tom says, if I had to learn an instrument in 24 hours, what would you recommend? Well, the triangle, Tom. You could be called Triangle Tom. No, I think if it's a stringed instrument, bass. I'm not taking anything away from bass players at all. But I think if you had to learn an instrument in 24 hours and had to learn how to jam with a band, you could kind of crazy-ate your way through. Let me get my acoustic bass a second. So if you had to, as long as you knew what the notes were on the bottom string, you'd have to learn the bottom string, which is E, F, F sharp, G, G sharp, A sharp or B flat, B, C, C sharp, D, D sharp, E. You could kind of crazy-ate your way through, which is 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1. This is G, by the way, on the 3rd, up to C on the 8th. 1 and 2 and 3, back to G on the 3rd. 2. D on the 10th. Okay, so you can get away with that. Sorry, D on the 10th. C on the 8th. G on the 3rd. So you can kind of get away with it by playing crazy eights or just playing a kick drum. 1, 2 and 3, 4, 1, 2 and 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. But that's, yeah, you can learn, I say you can learn that in a day, but the proper bass players, no, you couldn't learn that. But if you had to learn an instrument in one day, yeah, I'd say probably the bass would be a pretty good call. And you know, I cocked that right up and I left it in. Because I don't care. I'm human. And I make mistakes. Couldn't really see. I haven't got the lights on in here. Not I'm sitting in the dark, but, you know, it's I haven't put the main lights on in here. I'm just sitting in by the natural light, and it's starting to get a bit dark. So, yeah, that's had a bit of fun with that, but you never know what you're going to get.
Ever wanted to play guitar? 10-minute tutorials, now on YouTube. Beginner's Guitar. Marcus takes you through the early stages, tuning, basic chords and strum patterns to start you on your journey. Further information, go to www.innovationstudios.com.
All right, one last question. Okay. Oh, this is quite a good one. I like this one. This is from Shane, and he says, Shane is in Thundersley. Oh, I could have, Shane, you should have just walked here and given me your question. Marcus, who are the most bootlegged band? Right. I would have to say, now, not that I believe in bootlegs, by the way, because I don't. But in terms of let's say, unofficial recordings of shows. Now, in this day and age with people filming stuff on their phones, and you're able to, I would say that, in my opinion, the one band that I could pretty much guarantee if I went to see a show within a week, certainly within a month, 20 years ago, but within a day, these days, that show would be in full on YouTube, is Iron Maiden. I reckon they probably are the most bootlegged band. A few years ago, I had a friend of mine who used to be a collector, and he gave me it would have been like a Data DVD or something. And I said to him, you know what? And he said, what tour do you want? So I said, well, seventh tour of a seventh tour from 1988. No Prayer on the Road, 1990. Probably Power Slave or World Slavery, 84, 85. Okay. And he gave me this DVD that literally had MP3s of every show on that tour, from audience recordings to, sound desk recordings. I mean, they had everything. And Iron Maiden have always been bootlegged right the way back to 1981. You can hear the Maiden Japan. You can hear them live in New York at the ballroom. All these different bootlegs. Back when it used to be tapes, used to go on the market. Used to be a guy on the market at Basildon. Don't know his name. Used to sell tapes. I had the whole recording of Metallica at Donington in 1991. There was an audience recording. There also used to be a guy who used to advertise videos of shows. I don't know whether he'd got them himself, but I had AC/DC in Toronto in 1990. That was a bootleg VHS. To this day, I don't know where it came from. But he used to have all these shows of these bands on tour. But his list, Iron Maiden had so many more. And these days, you can pretty much get everything within 24 hours. My daughter went to see Ed Sheeran, and the very next day I was able to download the whole show for her. Someone had filmed on their phone, you know, found it on YouTube, sent her the link. Well, didn't download it, but I sent her the link, and she was able to watch the show the next day. So, but over the years, sort of 30 years ago, Iron Maiden, I think, hands down, are the most bootlegged band. People think it's the Beatles or the Stones, but I reckon I've seen more bootleg recordings of Iron Maiden than any other band. And I don't collect them, and I certainly don't think that it's acceptable either, but they are moments of history. And they're on, some of them are so readily available on YouTube these days that it's okay to say it, but yeah, Iron Maiden were just, they had everything. I saw them at the O2 in 2010, and I came back the next day and downloaded the whole show, or found a whole show on YouTube the next day. And I thought, wow. And these days they're on a tour at the moment, somewhere back in time. Well, I can't think what it's called now, but this is the latest tour they're on. And they've played four shows on the tour, and they're all on YouTube in their entirety. So, you know, I would say they've got to be the most bootlegged band. Bob Dylan had quite a lot of bootlegs. But Oasis had quite a lot as well in 95, 96. You know, you couldn't go anywhere without somebody saying, do you want a recording of Main Road from 96, you know, both shows? Or I've got a recording of them up at Loch Lomond in Scotland just before they came down to do Nebworth. They were in Scotland the week before, the 3rd and the 4th, and then they came down and did the 10th and 11th at Nebworth, but they were up in Scotland the week before that. So Oasis were pretty much bootlegged. The early Oasis, you know, 94, 95, 96, lots of available videos of that, and there's lots of stuff coming out. The ultimate bootleg is that one that's come out recently of the Beatles playing in 1962, and I reckon they're going to remix it and find a way of getting it all remixed and readily available as a live recording. So there's probably lots of different footage like that, but yeah. I mean, over the years, I've had or been offered or seen or owned hundreds of Iron Maiden bootlegs. They're my favourite band, probably. Them and AC/DC and the Beatles, but they're probably my favourite band. So I would say that. But I don't know of many other artists that have that kind of cult following that their shows are so readily available. But they are the most bootleg band I've ever seen. But if you disagree, you're allowed to. And if you've got millions of bootlegs of AC/DC, but then definitely let me know because I want to hear that. And if you've got lots of Beatles stuff, definitely let me know. Or The Who. So let me know. There's these days of YouTube and people kind of having more access to stuff is unearthing all of these gems. Iron Maiden at Wembley Arena 1990 was like a soundboard mixing and it was so awesome. No Prayer on the Road, the first tour with Yannick Gers. Awesome, you know. Great gig. So, you know, there's a few out there, but every show that I've been to, certainly every Iron Maiden show I've been to, I have at one time owned a bootleg recording of it. Not that I got it from anywhere, but that I was offered it. I certainly don't sell them on. They were pretty much just, I stumbled across them through various Iron Maiden forums or stuff like that. So definitely the most bootleg band. That was a fun question to answer. I had a lot of fun today. Thank you very much for being here and for continuing to support me. I will be back next week. And I look forward to seeing you then. I was pressing a few buttons and lost track of what I was talking about. Probably for about an hour. Take care of yourselves. Yozzy Music signing off. Bye-bye for now.